time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I don't believe in sportsmanship or class. I want coach fights. Let's get these two middle-aged millionaires to brawl on the field. That is what I'm looking for.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
He was so amped up and sitting on go, knowing that he was going to be asked about it. No matter what, he didn't hear her first part of her question or last part of her question, and he just pushed torpedo launch, and he just went in it, man.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Oklahoma's a disaster. I mean, they gave up 27 points in the first quarter to TCU. Brent Venables is supposed to come in and fix the defense? Oh, they're worse.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. Huge week five. Huge. I only went 3-3 on my picks. I got a few picks wrong.
I did far better than you.
You did far better, but I mean, it was some swing game. First off, Arkansas had plenty of chances to cover.
Oh, I know.
They did.
I thought it was going to get the backdoor cover there.
Come on, man. Coach Pittman.
That was my only miss. Come on,
we love you here on the pod, and we do not want our relationship to change because of this. Woo pig. Thought old man. Whatever. But here is the prediction I had correct. No cider mill. No apple picking. This is a college football week for college football fans.
Yes.
Because if you look at it, all the top teams still won. Nothing really happened. It was kind of close. Georgia almost lost. It's all the other crap. It's all the other crap.
Yeah.
This is why you can't be signed up to go to the cider mill. Oh, we'll get duck. We'll get the donuts and feed them to the ducks. No. I got to watch this. Why do you care about Ole Miss and Kentucky? You don't understand. You got to watch it all. Kansas? Why are you watching Kansas? You don't understand. I can't be feeding donuts to the ducks. Not today. It's not an apple picking weekend. It's not. No. This is a week to watch football. Anything could happen. Everything did. It was total mayhem outside of all the parts of the football that actually matter, like who's going to win the national title. Absolute brilliance.
Yeah,
I will start with the Georgia, though. Let's talk briefly with some of the top contenders.
Yep.
After I say all that. Two straight weeks, Georgia's just screwing around. Almost, you know, Kent State, you figure, okay, it's Kent State. We don't care. Big week out at the bars. Good time to cash in on being part of the national champions. You figure Kirby goes ballistic all week. It's an SEC road game at Missouri. Come up, they don't play well. I mean, they are getting pushed around at times by Missouri. Mizzou technically had a chance to win, but then they remembered they were Missouri. And fell apart. So Georgia wins. They dominate on the ground late. Stetson Bennett plays a little bit better. Whatever. Concerns, though. Is there a concern here? Not so much they're not trying, but maybe that Oregon onslaught was more the aberration than the rule when it comes to Georgia this year. Is there a softness in this Bulldog team? Because they can get away with it against Kent State and Mizzou, but they might not against Kentucky and Florida and whatever's coming out of the SEC West. Ross, what do you think?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it didn't even cross my mind that maybe the season opener was like as you said, maybe we just got a little fooled by the 49-3 game. Yeah, maybe that's possible. I mean, you look at, to me, it's the defense, right? We're so used to Georgia's defense just shutting out folks or just not allowing very many points at all. And they've allowed 44 points combined the last two games to Missouri and Kent State. That's the most they had allowed in like the previous four games combined going back to last year, I believe. I mean, there was a stretch last year's defense, you know, where they allowed like, two touchdowns in like eight games or something. So it's defensively that you kind of scratch your head. And Missouri did have to settle for a bunch of field goals. So Georgia's defense stepped up in the red zone. But Missouri was able to move the ball up and down the field, and that's just shocking. It's just something you don't see a lot with Georgia. I mean, Missouri only had 300 yards of offense, but it sure seemed like more. They were able to consistently move the ball, and Kent State was kind of the same. So that's been the weird part, is the Georgia defense we saw last year. I know they lost a lot of people to the NFL, but kind of head scratching for sure.
Yeah, I think they've gotten sloppy. And I think, first of all, the start to me was more than just annihilating Oregon. It was also annihilating South Carolina on the road when South Carolina was feeling pretty good about itself. So I thought they were legitimately extremely good for 3 weeks. And then they've been extremely sloppy for 2 weeks. They've been -2 turnover margin each of the last two games. And yeah, their offensive line, I thought, just had a very hard time with Missouri. Missouri played with its hair on fire. I mean, they played really hard, and they blitzed the hell out of Stetson Bennett. And for the most part, I thought Stetson handled it okay. It was more that the offensive line didn't handle it very well. So there's certainly some areas that you look at and say, okay, a team with a better quarterback than Missouri's could maybe exploit a few more things, and a team that can find ways to rush the passer as well or better than Missouri could exploit some things. So, I mean, Georgia doesn't look like they are head and shoulders the best team in the country anymore like they did for 3 weeks, in my opinion.
This is a common theme, O-line, right? O-line issues. Look at Alabama, right? That's been their bugaboo. We saw that in a couple of games. And even the game I was at, Ole Miss, Kentucky, like Kentucky's offensive line was just awful. The O-line is an issue for some of the top teams for sure.
Well, we'll get to Alabama, Bryce Young. We'll get more updates. It seems like it was a sprained shoulder. Who knows what that means?
Right.
That seems like a huge variant.
Don't ask Nick about it.
let's talk about the kids that played.
Did y'all see after that game? She asked it. She was asking her. She framed the question oddly, but she said, despite Bryce Young's injury, you know, blah, 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 the rest of the team. And he was so amped up and sitting on go, knowing that he was going to be asked about it no matter what. He didn't hear her first part of her question or last part of her question. And he just pushed torpedo launch and he just went in it, man. He was so ready to go. And then it's almost like the poor. I felt so sorry for her because it didn't matter what she was asking.
She did well. Pushing it, man. She did well.
She did do well. She did do well. Yeah.
She did do well. She goes, all right, let's talk about the other guy. Geez, your Heisman Trophy winning superstar quarterback hurt his. It was a kind of a part of the game.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's classic Saban. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he's smart enough, to obviously, to know what's coming, but he's just going to take it and turn it exactly the way he wants to go with it. And, you know, he's ticked off because his star quarterback's hurt.
Yeah.
So.
He is, and I don't know, who's harder to interview either after or during the game, Saban or Greg Popovich? Popovich is famous for the Popovich, it's a game. Like, he tries to just mess with the people. So it's almost like there's not a meanness to it. Right.
Right.
But he'll just be like, what do you got to do better in the second quarter? Score, defend, rebound. You know, it's just like, okay. Why? He just thinks the purpose of this is stupid. Saban comes with the anger. It's like,
Yeah.
I feel bad for that because it's like nightmare. You don't want to be that. I don't know who the reporter was, and I'm not even going to bring her up. I don't know. I'm not going to look it up because it's like you're just waiting for that viral moment where you get screamed at by this maniac.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm not a 19-year-old redshirt freshman. I'm like a professional here. I'm the woman assigned by ESPN or CBS. Like I'm just asking. I have to ask 3 questions after the game. That's it. You know the deal. Like, what are you yelling at me for, man?
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I didn't bring it up in the second question, not the first question. Like, whatever.
And she did handle it well because she fired back at him. Well, yeah, let's talk about the rest of the team.
Let's talk about it.
You know, and he kind of was almost caught off guard. He ended up reeling off some things, but yeah, man, he was sitting on go no matter what she asked. He was ready to put rocket launch, and he did.
How much trouble are they if Bryce Young is not healthy for a stretch? Now they got this, what was once the biggest game ever against Texas A&M this weekend that now College Game Day isn't even going to. What were the preseason odds that College Game Day would not be in Tuscaloosa for the Texas A&M Alabama game?
And not only not be in Tuscaloosa, but be in Lawrence, Kansas.
Be in Lawrence, Kansas. So we'll get to that
tells you again, why college football is the greatest.
10,000 to 1. 10,000 to 1. Yeah. Maybe more.
You have to watch it all. You have to watch it all. And you're like, why are you watching Kansas beat Iowa State 14-11? Because it's like, because this is awesome. If you don't know, you don't know.
See, you're picking apples. You're missing out. Can't be doing it.
I'm gonna
pumpkin
kill the
patch.
Apple,
no,
the Apple Orchard Association is now on the latest crap list that I'm on. They're all mad. They're gonna be all mad at me. Apple picking is a family activity dating back to the 1700s. I'm like, no.
Go on Sunday, not on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Bryce Young needs to get back. Kid's really, really good. But Alabama, we'll see. It's a big game next week anyway. So,
I mean, I was impressed that Alabama reasserted itself. You're up like 28-0 or 28-7. I don't remember what it was. And then it gets back to 28-23. And the pig fans are going crazy and your quarterback is hurt. And it's like, oh, they were wobbling a little bit, but then they absolutely turned it on. I mean, big play after big play after big play offensively. And I'm wondering where the back end speed is for Arkansas, because it's like 70 yards, 70 yards, 70 yards. But that was an impressive response. I think that for that, Saban's got to be happy about that. But yes, clearly you need your Heisman Trophy quarterback back sooner than later playing in the SEC.
I think that game was like you saw where there's still a couple recruiting classes away, Arkansas. Like,
yeah,
you know, right? It's like they're still getting the depths. Go ahead, Ross.
And it's the fourth quarter, right? Yeah, we talk about, you know, Nick Saban's teams quite a bit in the fourth quarter, and you hear a lot. You know, I think it was Saban who, back when he was at LSU, started the original fourth quarter program winter workouts with Tommy Moffitt, and that was always the focus in every game. It's Nick Saban, and in the fourth quarter when he has a lead there, they don't give it up, and that's exactly what we saw. But give it up for Jahmyr Gibbs, Alabama running back, over 200 yards. Yeah. had a big touchdown run, I think late, you know, in that game, and kind of took over when his quarterback was out. But it doesn't sound like a real serious injury. I mean, Saban made it sound like Bryce Young has had this injury before and recovered pretty quickly. So, but it's not like they need him. I mean, honestly, they don't need him against A&M.
I mean,
I don't think they need him against A&M. I mean, I think they can win the game without him.
You could go single wing probably and outscore A&M at this point.
Their offense is so dysfunctional. What? It's amazing how bad it is.
Yeah. When they need him is when they go to Knoxville October 15th.
Yes, for sure. Yep. Gotta that offense is not dysfunctional. That offense is pretty impressive. And yeah, that'll be a big one.
DJ Ungulale is playing now like we thought he might play last year. Mm-hmm. Super impressed in their victory over NC State. That was a hyped game. NC State came out and threw some punches. Like, credit to the Wolfpack program. It was, I wrote a column, is this the biggest game in program history? It kind of was. Amazing stat on NC State. They're never bad. They're never great. In the history of the entire program, they have one 10-win season. 2002. Wow. One 10-win season. Yet,
Chuck Amato, baby.
Yet, they're like 38 games above 500. Like, yeah, they've been to a bowl 11 of the last 14 years. Like, they're always 7-5, 8-4. Mm-hmm. And this is a big game. They played pretty well. But I thought Ungulale was the difference. Him on the read option is, jeez, he's good.
Yeah.
He's getting better. He's an improving runner. There's still times he's so mechanical. You know, he doesn't move
right
especially
decision.
Well.
I don't know, big, man. He tore him.
He is big.
He's big. He's lumbering. That last. When he runs, he's lumbering.
Yeah.
Does his play, improving play, change thoughts on what Clemson's capable of this year?
Yes, I think. I mean, I've been impressed the last couple of weeks, because those are big games against good teams, Wake Forest and NC State, and he stepped up and Clemson stepped up. They are not a dominant team. This is not like 2018 Clemson by any stretch, but are they good enough to run the table? Yes, I think they are. There will be some tough games remaining, so, you know, some tricky ones at Florida State October 15th or at Notre Dame November 5th. But they can. They're one of those teams that just can line up, I think, and find ways to win every single week. And DJ is a big part of that. So I look at Clemson and I like their path towards playoff contention for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And remember last year, I mean, I think part of the struggles last year was, you know, he wasn't more involved on the ground. You know, he didn't have that threat, and that's one of the big things he brings, and you need to have that threat when you have somebody like that back there. Now clearly they're getting in the ball. I mean, I think he had 14 carries, 70 yards rushing. I don't know how many of the 14 were scrambles, but he probably had at least seemed like 8 to 10 called runs, design runs. So they're certainly trying to get him involved, and that's a game changer.
TCU, Sonny Dykes, 4-0. They didn't just beat Oklahoma, they just dominated Oklahoma. 55-24, 668 yards.
Unbelievable.
Running game, almost 9 a carry. Max Duggan, 302 yards passing. He also busted out a 67-yard TD run. Kendre Miller had a long run over 60 yards. Absolutely dominant. I think when you lose Gary Patterson, who remains one of the best coaches I've ever seen and one of the most influential figures in a single school you could possibly have, because without Gary Patterson, TCU is in whatever, Mountain West still.
Yeah.
Gary Patterson got the boosters excited to raise $100 million and build that nice little stadium. Everything, TCU is where it is because Gary, but if they get rid of him, they're, you know, what are they, 5-7 last year, and you know, they fade out, and Dykes comes in, and holy cow, this team is good, and they're heading up to Kansas for the game day. I know it's going to be a lot of hype on how Kansas is this great story, and it is, but this is also a good showcase for TCU.
Absolutely. I was there in August, and they definitely felt like they had a good team. Although the hilarious thing, this is, you know, how coaches do. They're like, yeah, we don't know who's going to start. You know, we might play 3 quarterbacks. Oh, really? You got a guy who's number 1 in the nation right now in pass efficiency and looks like a Heisman Trophy candidate. Max Duggan was always going to be the quarterback, and he's been fantastic. And that's even without the big run he had. And was over 100 yards rushing. But the vibe in general was like, look, yeah, we all love Gary Patterson here. We wish we had been able to transition a little more gracefully, but it was time for a breath of fresh air. And they got it, and now Sonny Dykes has come in and cranked up that offense. Holy moly. And they've got good players. That's the thing. They felt like they really had underachieved last year and in some previous years. So that was part of the frustrations. Like, let's just get these guys cranked up, coached up, and unleash them, and look what's happening here. And then on the flip side of it, Oklahoma's a disaster. I mean, they gave up 27 points in the first quarter to TCU. Brent Venables supposed to come in and fix the defense? They're worse. It's actually worse than it was in the Lincoln Riley days. The Oklahoma fans are going to have a hard time spinning this one other than just blaming Lincoln Riley.
Let's get to that.
Speaking of Lincoln Riley, Garrett Riley, by the way, quarterback's coach for TCU, Lincoln's brother, his quarterback's coach for TCU put up all those points on his brother's former team.
Wonder if there was a brother or the brother.
Have y'all seen a picture of Garrett Riley? Google Garrett Riley. And he is spitting image of brother Lincoln. It's scary. I mean, they look like twins, man. I don't know what their separation in age is, but it's...
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
That's the same person. Oh, wait, there's a picture. There's a picture of the two of them together.
Oh, wow. Oh,
they nice. Do look...
I mean, it's...
They look... Yeah. Holy moly.
Yeah. Well, one's a little taller. Yeah. But Lincoln's a little taller. Anyway... Yeah, what alarm fire is this at Oklahoma? We talked before the season a lot about you don't know if a guy can coach until he coaches. And we talked a couple weeks ago about Marcus Freeman. It's like he's going to have to grow into this job, clearly. This seems worse than even that. I don't know. Hard to say, but like you're just getting doors blown off by TCU's offense, and you're supposed to be the defensive coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of bad. There's a lot of questions, right, Pat? Remember, didn't he, Ted Roof, he hired as as defensive coordinator. I remember when that hire was made, there was a lot of scratching of the head. So I don't know what's going to happen there. Something to monitor, but I'm sure Venables has his fingerprints all over the defense. So you would think it would be him, but it's shocking what's happened there. I know they lost a lot of players to the portal, coaching change, all that stuff, and you know, but I don't know. Alex Grinch had kind of built that defense up, it seemed like, and they were improving, but to give up what they got, they gave up against TCU is inexcusable. 300-yard passer, 200-yard rushers, and 100-yard receiver. Yeah, bad.
Yeah. It's concerned. Yeah, we'll see. It's early. It is what it is. They got Red River. You win that, it always helps either Texas or Oklahoma and that program, you know, the fan base to feel a little better. But this was certainly not fun for Oklahoma fans, especially as they watch what's going on at USC.
Yeah, people are not happy with Ted Roof. Brent Venables is the defensive guy there. Yeah. Come on, man. I mean, this is his defense. Shoveling this off on Ted Roof by the fans is like, well, we're not ready to admit that Brent Venables isn't doing a good job, because we can't admit that.
We've talked a lot of Kansas, and it's a great story, but they won 14-11 Rock over chalk. Iowa State. Rock chalk, great stuff, but let's not get too carried away. That was...
Boo. Wetzel's Boo. Even harder to please, to impress than game day.
I built the bandwagon early. I built the bandwagon at KU. But let's...
Well,
great. You beat Iowa State. I'm not spending 20 minutes talking about beating Iowa State. They've sucked since we found out that the Ames, Iowa water song is not true. It hasn't been the same.
We pretty well blew up the program with them.
Kind of did. Kind of. The recruits just like, oh, I'll go to Keokuk Community College. They have better water. How about this program that never gets its hype in the state of Oklahoma is Oklahoma State. They go roll into Baylor, and they're just more dominant. And there's a really interesting quote from Dave Aranda, the Baylor coach, after. He says this team's – he just thinks Oklahoma State's more confident and just prepared and just like just everything about the program is running so well. So it is a really nice time to be a Cowboy. Because you're rolling. You're looking good. You could win this league. And your buddies that are trying to bail on Bedlam or are bailing on Bedlam are just stumbling about drunk down in Norman. So,
yeah.
Oh, script is flipped. The mullet is the paragon of consistency.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I thought they were the best team in the conference coming into the season, and so far, so good. I mean, they've only played one conference game, but go to Waco and win and pretty well dominate the game. I mean, they controlled it, at least. They had that game. They led the whole way and were pretty well in charge. Spencer Sanders is playing great quarterback there. He was so bad in that Big 12 championship game, and since then, he's just been really good at the Fiesta Bowl and then starting this season. Baylor gives him some difficulties, but that's a good team, good offense, and I think ultimately could prove to be the best team in the Big 12.
You know, and the good thing about Oklahoma State is, you know, for years of Mike Gundy, maybe his first 10 years at the program, 12 years at the program, they had to score 40, 50 points a game to win. You know, they relied on that offense. And lately, that's not been the case. Last year, they were one of the best defenses, arguably the best defense in the nation. And then this game is a good example of they didn't need some explosive offense. They got a safety, for one. Outside of the third quarter, they absolutely locked down the Bears defensively. And they returned a kickoff, 98 yards for a touchdown. So they're doing it in a variety of ways. They're a more complete team the last two or three years than we've ever seen under Gundy. And is this the year? Is this the year they finally crack into the playoff? It feels like it's heading that direction, especially with this crazy Big 12, where you've got everybody's kind of beating up on each other, and that at the top of the league is Kansas and TCU. It just feels like maybe this is the Pokes' year to maybe crack into that top four.
My favorite moment almost of the weekend came late in the Ohio State beatdown of Rutgers. Ohio State's got the, they're going to punt fourth and short. Rutgers lines up pretty much everyone on one side, right side of their defense or left side of the Ohio State offensive line to try to run in and maybe block the punt. Eh, game's kind of out of control. I don't know. Jesse Mirko, Ohio State's punter, well coached, sees that it's wide open to the right, on his right. So he gets the ball. He's kind of a rugby style kicker, I think. Rolls right, just keeps trucking. Kind of unsportsmanlike. I mean, you're beating them by 39, but you can see where the, you know, kid's told to do this. He gets trucking, gets out of bounds after a large gain. He also could have slid or something like that. Didn't. Aaron Crickshanks from Rutgers comes running up and absolutely levels him out of bounds. The next level of unsportsmanlike play. Both benches erupt. Greg Schiano and Ryan Day getting each other's faces, pointing, screaming at each other. They used to work together on Urban Meyer's staff. I was excited at the possibility of a scrap. This would not be a lightweight matchup. Schiano, I think, is like 13, 14 years older, but I don't know. I wouldn't want to tussle with that bear, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I see the pictures. Wow, I had missed this.
Yeah, they got into it good. So I was very excited because it was like pretty much everything was unsportsmanlike. And then all the fans yelled at each other for not being classy. The other programs, did this and you did that.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
really? Yeah. Yeah. I loved it all. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah.
Classless. Nobody loves all unsportsmanlike conduct.
I don't believe
Wetzel
in sportsmanship or class. I want coach fights. Let's get these two middle-aged millionaires to brawl on the field. That is what I'm looking for. So it's going great, but then they hug it out after and say, "Oh, I was just defending my guys." Isn't it? Oh, come on.
Right. And Ryan Day wasn't backing down. He like got separated and then he went back at him. But the finger, Ryan Day's finger came within like 1 foot of Greg Schiano's nose.
Mm-hmm. Again, Schiano, 56 years old, I see here.
I wouldn't want to mess with him.
I don't care.
No, I wouldn't want to mess with him.
No. Yeah, he's got, he's more than just like old dad strength. Mm-hmm. Like this guy, he can, he's not just a guy in the house to get the pickle jar open.
He also is New Jersey, man. He fights dirty like George Costanza. Oh. He would fight dirty.
Beat your ass and then go get a nice meal at the grease truck. That's Saturday night at Rutgers. And he's like, I'm pissed off. Yeah, it would have been a good fight, but then they didn't fight. So it was really almost great. But I blame no one because I blame everyone. And I just love Rutgers and Ohio State fans arguing who's classier.
This is Dan Wetzel's favorite moment in the pandemic was when Missouri and Florida brawled at halftime. That's what we know when you're turning on the TV and you see a fight. Think of Dan. That's his highlight of the day right there. So.
All right, speaking of what should have been a fight, but was not, Illinois rolls into Madison. The return of Brett Bielema. Now with the Illinois, he had led, the 3 Big Ten titles or something for Wisconsin or 3 trips to the playoff. I don't know what he did.
Rose Bowl.
Huge coach up there. Yeah. Couple Rose Bowls. 34-10, Illinois. Illinois is now 4-1, complete, as you've mentioned, Pat. I watched the end of that Indiana game. They should have beat Indiana. They should be 5-0 in one of the biggest stories in the country. Chase Brown, I mean, it was classic. It was just like classic Illinois, man. They just like Chase Brown, 25 carries, 129 yards, and then Tommy DeVito rushes for 3 TDs. They get 4 rushing touchdowns, kick some field goals, get some things, get it done, and defense is great. Graham Mertz can't do anything. 2 picks. Illinois just beats it. Wisconsin, easy. So thoughts, Pat, on both. I mean, Bielema's here. He's Big Ten West sucks. They could win this thing. And I just think this might be the biggest game for him to be like, all right, recruits, it's going to happen here now. And Wisconsin, which feasts off those west suburbs of Chicago in recruiting, because I think they're geographically closer in Madison to you know, to those places than Champaign, not by much, yeah. But thoughts on that. And then Paul Crist, but you know, this is not, you're 2-3, yep. 0-2 in the conference, alarm bells there.
Yep. Yep. No, thoughts on both. Look, Bealum is getting it done and it's pretty cool to see. I mean, that he's just got a formula and they're this is a little bit different formula because they're a little bit better throwing the ball than they have been, but it's physical football and he's got a great defensive coordinator. I mean, a rock star, I think, in Ryan Walters, who's going to be a head coach perhaps very soon. So he's put together a good staff and he's got guys playing his way. And it didn't take him long to turn the ship. That's one of the impressive things where if you're seeing, you know, some of these guys like, it's going to take a while. We got to get in our guys. Well, Bealum, last year they were 5-7 and it was a good 5-7. They had some good wins. They beat Nebraska. They beat Penn State on the road. And now, yeah, I think they can win the Big Ten West. And here's the interesting thing on the other side of the equation, not just with Wisconsin, but Iowa and Northwestern. The Big Ten West sucks, and one of the biggest reasons it sucks is because the guys who are the institution coaches that you could never imagine leaving their schools aren't doing very well right now. Pat Fitzgerald, we talked about him and his loyalty to Northwestern and Northwestern's loyalty back. Paul Crist, this is year 2, 4, 6, 8, his eighth year at Wisconsin, and before that he was an assistant, and he was, you know, he's from Madison. Like, it's hard to imagine anything fitting better than Paul Crist in that boring sweatshirt on the sideline there.
I love it. Yeah. The sweatshirt.
And then Kirk Ferentz at Iowa and his son, who there were chants of fire Brian at Kinnick Stadium yesterday. I was there for the latest offensive disaster from them. But that's what's going on in the Big Ten West is – the guys that you could count on are not doing a very good job right now with their programs.
Man, you look at Illinois, gosh, they could very well be undefeated. That Indiana game, remember, Indiana scored late in the final seconds to win that game. And, man, they just right there. And some big games coming up for the Illini, right? They host the back-to-back home games against Iowa and in Minnesota. And as we've seen, right, those are two winnable games. Purdue beat Minnesota this past weekend, so it can be done. And as Pat just alluded to, Iowa's offense still stinks. So winnable games. Gosh, could Illinois go to travel to Nebraska October 29th at 6-1? That would be exciting for the Illini.
Yeah, they're rolling. That's quicker than I thought. But yeah, Bealum, you know, I know it never got going really at Arkansas, but they weren't that bad.
No, they had some good years.
They had some good years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were never that. It's not like it just was like a total failure. It just wasn't, you know, it just wasn't really working. But it wasn't one of these like, yeah, we're 2-10 and we got, you know, there's dysfunction. He just runs a good program and I've always said Illinois to me is the most underachieving athletic department, but certainly football. I mean, they're never good. They're in the fourth, fifth biggest state in the country, you know, and it's 2 hours from Chicago, 2 hours from St. Louis, 2 hours from Indianapolis. Like there's just no reason to never be good.
Right.
And they're just never good. And now they're good. And this man, if they can get Brett Bealum, I'll get that thing cranking a little bit where they're just that, you know, occasionally make the Big Ten championship game or, you know, just be a tough out. I think there's a fan base that's dying to do this.
No doubt.
They're sleeping, but they should start showing up now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Friday night program coach. We always kind of criticize because it's never quite gotten going out there. UCLA Chip Kelly handed it to Washington. Who was up to 15th. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, DTR, their quarterback. Huge game, playing really well. He's been around for a while. Thoughts on the Bruins after this weekend? Pat, you watch that game?
Yeah, some of that. I mean, super impressive win. You know, I know that they were trying to get people to come to the stadium. It was 6:30 start on a Friday, and LA traffic and yada, yada, yada. You know, that's just part of the that fan base and the struggle that they have to kind of build at least a fan atmosphere at the Rose Bowl. But holy moly, they showed up and the team showed up and played fantastic. That was a great performance. And yeah, DTR is playing great. They do seem to have it going. They were very, very close to losing to South Alabama. Probably should have lost to South Alabama, but they didn't. And since then, they've trampled two Pac-12 opponents. And looking down Colorado, the road here.
Colorado is one of them.
Colorado's horrible. Yeah. Colorado's the worst Power Five team.
The state of Colorado is worse than the state of Massachusetts in football.
Ugly.
It's hard to believe, but it's true, except for Air Force, baby.
I forgot about them. Okay.
Colorado Springs represent.
They belong to all of us.
But the next 2 weeks will tell us everything about UCLA.
Yeah.
Now, the next two games, I'm sorry, they have a bye week in there, but they have Utah coming to the Rose Bowl Saturday and then on an off week, and then they're at Oregon. And if they're still undefeated then we really got something.
Yeah. It was a weak non-con schedule.
Yeah. That was my small sample guy, DTR for sure. He played really well. His hurdle was incredible. Y'all see the hurdle? He hurdled a guy, and it was like the most beautiful hurdle that I've seen, I think, on a football field. It was like perfect form, you know, son of a track coach, you know, perfect. I can see the perfect hurdle, and it was beautiful. It brought the knee up, and so awesome. Responsible for like 350 yards and four touchdowns. And DTR rolling, man. It's hard to believe that he's still in college. God, it feels like he's 28.
I know. Been a while.
He said after that, like, he reads, he's not oblivious to all the people who, you know, send him messages on Instagram and social media, and it hurts. He admitted it hurts. I hate that, you know? And so I'm glad to see a guy have his moment and kind of be like, yeah, I remember all that stuff. All right, Ross, state of Mississippi. Big weekend. You were down there. You went to the SIP. Come to the SIP. Ross went to the SIP.
Went to the SIP, yes.
Went to the SIP. First off, Mississippi State, 42-24 of a Texas A&M, who's got to be one of the most disappointing teams in the country. Mm. They're so disappointing that result is almost not even disappointing. I was like early on, Mississippi State's
lock of the week.
Yeah.
My lock of the week. The Bulldogs easily got me to got it locked up there. Yeah, I was.
How do we do it? Our locks of the week. Did we hit them all? I hit again.
I hit mine.
Sean was let down by Oregon State.
All right. The parlay.
But the other three of us, we all nailed it.
Yeah. I hit again on my Maryland. Michigan State's bad. Yes. Bad team.
Yeah.
They're in a lot of trouble. Mississippi, and then Mississippi beats Kentucky in a really exciting game early and a big thing. Did the fans show up?
They showed
early
up.
And stay, or were they drinking too much?
They showed up. Now they were a little bit late arriving. It was 11 a.m. kickoff. Let me tell you, I was in the square on Friday night, and knowing
I bet you were.
Thank you. Yes, and knowing that. You know, it's an 11 a.m. kick. It didn't seem like anybody cared. They were out in force. They were out. Maybe they did care because they were out early. There was a couple bars we went to, and it was one in, one out. They were limiting entry because of the fire code at 7 p.m. 7 p.m. They were limiting entry because of the fire code. There were people everywhere spilling down the alleys, down the streets. But you know what? They showed up. They got up. Must have had a little Red Bull, get a little spiked coffee, and they were all in the Grove. The walk, the Rebel Walk, was pretty incredible. And then they showed up to the game. Maybe a couple minutes in after kickoff, it was finally filled up. But Lane Kiffin was happy, and they were rocking and rolling. And you know, they I think Lane Kiffin said this afterward. They influenced the game. There were times in the game where you felt like the crowd probably did influence the game. And so it was a happy Lane Kiffin afterward. And not only that, but it was big weekend in Oxford. It was a heck of a 24 hours. I showed up early Friday to attend an announcement that was on campus. It was about an NIL collective that some of the Ole Miss boosters started. So I walk into this room for the announcement. There is obviously 5 to 10 of the school's biggest boosters there. about two dozen athletes, every head coach of every team on campus, the athletic director, several athletic administrators, a backdrop with the logo of the new collective. They had this hour-long celebration announcement about paying players, right? Paying players more, yeah. Getting organized. It was a kind of a jarring scene of the new world of college sports. And then, of course, a day later, they win a big home game against a top 10 team. So all is right in the world for Lane Kiffin right now. The Lane train's a-humming.
This was not the first time that the rich Ole Miss boosters got together for a meeting about paying players. It's just the first time they invited. We can do this on campus now? You said it.
We do it on campus now? The coaches and the AD
that the university provides?
Yes.
It's usually in a back room of a poker shanty and over in the Delta.
I did have somebody from Ole Miss come up to me knowing how much they knew how much, you know, I had followed and covered NIL the last couple years. And they came up to me after this news conference on campus with all these athletic administrators, coaches, athletes, boosters all together. And they came up to me and said, hey, just making sure, any red flags here? I'm like, no, I don't see anything. No flags at all.
I'm not the compliance director.
Nope, we're all good. No, but a few schools have done that. Iowa actually has held something like that over the summer. It's going to be happening more and more where you get everybody together. If your state law, the only reason they were able to do it is because Mississippi state law changed where you can communicate with third parties, basically communicate with collectives. So it's pretty much legal.
Their old recruiting strategy was having Sandra Bullock adopt offensive linemen. So this is when that, it's a hard one. That's hard. There's only so much you can do on that. It'll work a little, but does it, you know, Pat, thought on the SIP and on Bulldogs beating Texas A&M and how sad is a Texas A&M fan right now?
Oh, well, I mean,
we can get to that. Talk about Mississippi. We're about positivity here.
That's right. Up with people. Great day for the SIP, for the Bulldogs and for the Rebels. And just goes, I mean, the SEC West is just a grinder. I mean, it's unbelievable. The no easy out in that division. You know, I mean, heck, Auburn, who may be the worst team in the division, darn near had LSU knocked out on their feet early. It was 17-0 there before LSU rallied. Noted earlier that, you know, Arkansas had its comeback and had Alabama at least nervous. Maybe A&M's the worst team in the division. I don't know. But it is, as usual, really deep. And I, you know, the fans of both those programs, Mississippi and Mississippi State, care so deeply that they are up against it to a degree in terms of the population of the state. And they don't have some of the necessary advantages maybe that the other ones do, although they got a lot of good players in those states. But
start paying
to have them both playing well at the same time. That's why they went and got Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach at the same time. They got good coaches, and we're seeing the product.
Ole Miss has got they're at Vandy. They get Auburn, LSU at home, and at A&M.
Now, they're at LSU. Okay.
At LSU, I'm sorry. Yeah, now, we'll see. LSU, I think it's better than – it's going to be fine.
They could go to LSU at 7-1, though, for sure. Or 7-0.
They go to 7-1. Yeah. Well, look, and Auburn is going to keep losing. I know they want to fire Brian Harsin. I know they're going to fire Brian Harsin. But he's not doing that bad of a job, right? It's like, okay, like that was a tough game, whatever. But they go to LSU at 7-1. Then they got A&M after. We don't know what A&M – they could be – forget 7-1. They could be 7-0.
Yes,
at LSU.
At LSU, right.
7-0. They could be 9-0 against hosting Alabama on November 12th, which might be the biggest game in the Grove. I mean, they had that big Egg Bowl a few years ago. I went to, but like holy cow! Yeah, like this is, yeah. I mean, they end with Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi. I don't know. It is a meat grinder, but there is a little path here for Ole Miss. That is nice.
And hey, the NIL stuff up here, the whole announcement was well timed. We're heading into the silly season for a second straight year. Lane Kiffin's going to probably win 8, 9, 10 games and be on the market. And he has been vocal publicly, privately, whatever, about the struggles in NIL, in collaborative collectives up here. And so it's a big thing for him. I remember sitting in his office in April, him complaining about it, frustrated about it, and him saying, watch the next determining factor for head coaches moving jobs is how big is your NIL collective. And so I think this is pretty well timed by the Rebels to get ahead of that and make Lane very happy.
Well, I think you look at, like, if you look before people, why do you choose jobs? You choose them because proximity, how well can you recruit at the school? And facilities. Like, you always, you know, these coaches would always say, oh, the facilities here are incredible. We can recruit this area. Instead of spending the money on the facilities, they're spending the money on the players.
Yeah.
So those five or whatever huge boosters that were doling in for players, they would have had that meeting and said, hey, we're going to build another, even a bigger weight room. Yep. We're going to have three more racks than the Mississippi State and more square footage and all this stuff. And it's now it's like, hey, let's just buy the players.
That's right. And that's right. Somebody at Ole Miss said that to me. He said, I don't remember who it was, but he said, this is the new facilities arms race. Like, yeah, this is the new one. And some teams still are building facilities, but you could tell that is probably going to slow here.
Well, Texas Tech announced like a $200 million facility upgrade, and that's great. And I'm sure it's going to be unbelievable. But did they sat there and said, we're going to spend $200 million the next X number of years on players? You'd be like, holy cow. Texas Tech's going to get players.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But it's like, why do we need all these facilities? So Ole Miss has got nice facilities. They got good enough. Every one of these college programs have better facilities than the pros.
Yep.
I say, yeah. Patriots have a bubble.
Oh, Georgia's
one locker room, a bubble, football, and a field out back. That's it.
I toured Georgia's new football facility back in the spring. I've never been, in a football facility that looks like that. And I remember walking into Kirby Smart's office afterward, and I was like, that's better than every single NFL, facility. And he said, yeah, well, that's what happens when, we're not allowed to pay player salaries. We pump it into facilities. Of course, now they're allowed to kind of pay player salaries.
Yeah, so it's going to change. But this paying should help, Ole Miss. That they were always their best when they were paying. And hey, whatever, man, whatever. All right, one more that, Pat, you were at, is Michigan beating Iowa. Michigan's played, not the strongest schedule early, but now two quality wins. They beat Maryland, who's 4-1, and then they survived Iowa City. Again, we're not going to crown anyone over that, but a lot of teams have gone in there and lost. Thoughts on Michigan as they start kind of really ramping up the season for them finally?
Yeah, I it was impressive. The things that the key elements there, first of all, they hadn't played a road game yet, and sometimes, like a Washington that hadn't left, you go leave home for the first time, you go play a league game and you get your teeth kicked in. Kinnick Stadium has been a graveyard for top five teams. Five of the last six, including a Harbaugh coach Michigan team, have lost there. And Iowa just has a way of making things difficult for you. But they went in and absolutely punched them in the face. I mean, they took the opening drive 75 yards for a touchdown, and it was really a methodical victory after that. And there's an attitude, a confidence flowing out of the Michigan team that is tangible, I think you would say. They came out, they were waving pink towels before the game, kind of an acknowledgement of the pink visiting locker room they've got there at Iowa. And that defensive lineman, Mike Morris, who's a good quote, he said, we wanted to embrace everything they threw at us. They have a pink locker room thinking it's going to be some kind of adversity. We love the hate. We love everything about it. All we have to do is nut up and put on our big boy pants. We did that. Yeah. They nutted up. They wore their big boy pants, and they blew out Iowa to remain undefeated.
Yeah, it's hard to know, but they go to Indiana, and then they have a big home game against Penn State. But I don't think Michigan is fourth. I don't think it's proven to be the fourth best team in the country, but there's a lot of potential there. We'll see. Yeah. And that Penn State game kind of looming. That'll be a huge game for Penn State as well. All right, we have all sorts of crazy stories. We got too much football today, so we're going to get to that later in the week. But this is a, we have to get to this because this is an emergency. as you guys, as everyone knows, we're big fans of Pusha T, the hip hop star who has been doing McDonald's diss tracks. He did the Filet-O-Fish diss, and then he did the rib roast of the McRib. We've played him on here. We're big fans. Some Pusha T fans alerted us to this story. He had a concert in St. Louis, and a guy tweeted to him, at Pusha T, "I lost my prosthetic leg at your St. Louis show." Mitchell, ND Live, "I lost my prosthetic leg at your St. Louis show. Still had fun, though. Still had fun, though." Now, a couple things. Pusha went immediately out. I mean, first off, I don't know how you have fun when you're missing the leg. I don't know how you lose a leg. I'm not that familiar with prosthetics. Pusha T said, "We got to find that, man. If you are at the St. Louis show and know where my guy's prosthetic leg is, please hand it over." So this is an emergency because Mitchell does not have his leg.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you are at the St. Louis show of Pusha T, please tweet at us, at Pusha T, what, at Mitchell, whatever. Get this man's leg. If you saw a man leaving the Pusha T concert carrying a prosthetic leg for reasons I would not know, why would you steal this? Please alert. This is poor Mitchell, right? But how good is Pusha T show where you enjoyed the show even though you lost your leg? Ross?
Clearly, the man can put on a
hell
show.
Of a show. Hell of a show. I mean, really.
Still had fun, though.
Yeah. A blast.
What?
Yes. Wow. I got to get to one of these shows, huh? Jeez.
Oh, Push. It's a legend. Legend. If you, anyone in St. Louis, see a something with a, just be on alert. See something, say something. Us here in Pusha T Nation, got to help Mitchell.
Help him get his leg back.
Right. All right. We don't wait to the end of the year to hand out the Heisman. We hand it out week to week.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Pat, who is your small sample Heisman going to?
Yeah, I'm pulling an audible since we talked about Max Duggan before. I was going to do Max Duggan, but let's spread the love a little bit more widely. And let's go to our friend Michael Benson, the president at Coastal Carolina. Let's go to his school, the Chanticleers.
Valid, loyal listener.
Yes.
Yes.
He's usually on his walk on the beach.
Very good friend That's of the right. show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope he has the stamina to stay with us till the 54th minute of this show, because I'm giving my small sample Heisman to Coastal Carolina running back C.J. Beasley. Did you see the play he made to win the game against Georgia Southern?
Incredible.
There is less than a minute to play. They're driving. Handoff up the middle to Beasley. He breaks into the secondary, hurdles a safety at like the 8-yard line, stays on his feet, and runs in for the winning touchdown. It was an unbelievable play to win the game, and Coastal Carolina still undefeated. Go, Shants.
Well, we've already talked about him a little bit, but DTR, Dorian Thompson Robinson of UCLA, responsible for 350 yards of offense, I think three or four touchdowns, got the Bruins undefeated. As we said earlier, feels like he's been in college since the World War II, but it's been a long road, and I feel like he's a good example of why sometimes it's not, you know, the grass isn't greener on the other side. I think he probably had opportunities to leave, and he decided to stay, and now lo and behold, here he is leading the undefeated Bruins and in hurdling guys in impressive fashion. So we'll see if the Bruins, as we discussed, are real the next 2 or 3 weeks.
I'm giving my small sample Heisman to Jadarian Taylor, defensive end for UTEP, the UTEP Miners. You saw the game. Two things about this game. One, UTEP has been playing football since 1916. Their victory over Charlotte is the first time they've ever won a game in the Eastern time zone.
I did see that. I love that stat.
Weird facts. Just weird. I don't know how many times they played in the Eastern time. I figure they just play out, you know, but still, it's 106 years. The time zone's been there. A lot of schools in the Eastern time. UTEP gets their first win in the Eastern time zone. And part of it was because Jadarian Taylor, big man touchdown, not just a big man touchdown, he scoop and scores from 100 yards. It's a goal line play. Charlotte's going in. They fumble the ball. Jadarian picks it up, and you've got to see this man run. I hope he gets the NFL Combine just so we can watch this. His first 40 yards was like Usain Bolt.
Yeah, he was fast.
And he kept it up all the way. Like, if I'm an NFL general manager, I don't know whether he's he had a bunch of sacks. I mean, he's a good player. So maybe he's a draft pick. I hope he is. But he is on my radar just watching a man that large move that fast. Absolutely crazy. A 100-yard scoop and score to be the differentiating points in your school's first win in 106 years in a time zone. A stat I didn't even know existed. And good for the UTEP SID department who actually, like, looked that fact up.
That's a hell of a note.
Hell of a note. So good job, Jadarian. You win my small sample Heisman. Go Miners. All right. We said a lot of mean things on the pod. Can we say something nice? Ross, you got anything nice to say?
I never thought this season that I'd be saying something nice about this program, one of the worst in the Power Five. But the Ramblin' Wreck fired their coach a week before, go to Pitt, win the first road game against an AP-ranked team in 6 years after firing their coach. Give it up for Brent Key, interim coach at Georgia Tech, former offensive lineman there, got the guys together, won at Pitt, really impressive. Now, wasn't the prettiest win, but it was a win. They relied on the ground game a lot. Hassan Hall had like over 100 yards of rushing, and look at that. Maybe Brent Key's got a shot to keep the Wreck rolling, and although it probably seems like a long shot, win that full time job.
Yeah, that was an impressive turnaround there. We've seen some teams come out after their coach gets fired and absolutely laid an egg, and that was not them. So
I brought that up as a possible, like, if you think they're going to just dog it, usually they don't. They never cover, let alone win.
Also, good Lord, the Pitt in the ACC Coastal. Oh, man, the ACC Coastal is ACC Coastaling.
Yes, it is. All right, I'm going to say something nice about the Big 12 in toto, because how many times do we hear fans say, oh, nothing ever really changes in college football. It's the same team, same old, same old. It's Alabama, it's Georgia, it's Ohio State, it's Clemson. You know, in those leagues. Well, not in the Big 12, baby. Right now, the teams that have not lost a league game are Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and TCU. Among the three teams that are winless in the league, Oklahoma. Texas is one of the teams with two losses. It has been totally flipped from the normal script, and I love it. I think it's great that you can have this sort of upheaval when it's the October 8th is Red River, Texas and Oklahoma, and it is not the biggest game in the Big 12. That is TCU, Kansas. Then you know it's been a wild season, and I am here for all the wildness. I've enjoyed every bit of it so far. I hope there's more to come. Bring it on, Big 12.
I'm going to say something nice about something I've been saying lots of mean things about, and that is college football in New England, okay? Now, we're not going to talk about UMass because they blew a 13-point lead in Eastern Michigan, but the Holy Cross Crusaders have been hyping are 5-0 now. I think they beat Harvard.
Yeah.
More importantly, Phil Jurkovec and Zay Flowers combine to beat Louisville on Saturday, give Boston College its first FBS victory, 34-33. They had decimated on the offensive line. They got all sorts of problems. Jurkovec, the Notre Dame transfer, 18-21 passing, 304 yards, three touchdowns, including two of them. Two Flowers, two long ones, a 57 and a 69-yard nice catch there deal. Boston College wins. UConn gets Fresno. The moment that Jim Mora Jr. gets to play someone from California, where Tupac Shakur was from, and he supposedly may or may not know who killed Tupac, look what happens. They beat Fresno. They get their first FBS win. big happenings up in New England. This is probably the last time. BC hosts Clemson next week. I will probably not be saying anything nice after that game. But let's take our moment in the sun. All of us in New England football, there was something happened.
How about you mentioned Holy Cross, Dan, the Crusaders, 5-0. Bob Chesney, the coach, I want to say that he is on some radars in the FBS. He has just tore it up at multiple small colleges, came from Assumption. I think it's his fifth or sixth year at Holy Cross, following a 10-3 year. Right now they're 5-0 and just knocked off Harvard. So be on the lookout. Maybe the next Lance Leopold, maybe the next Dave Clawson, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's like, roll your eyes, because it's like, Holy Cross, you just beat Harvard. They don't have scholarships.
Yeah, right. Right, yeah.
Okay, like, it's not like, well, I got it going. And the school's got, I don't know how many kids, a few thousand kids. Like, it's a small Jesuit Catholic school in Worcester, Mass, with no scholarships. If you're winning, it isn't because you loaded up on recruits. It's because your coach knows what he's doing. So yeah,
3,000 enrollment, 3,000.
3,000, so 1,500 at most boys, men, and none of them are getting a scholarship. Yeah, so you beat Harvard, sure, but it's, you know, if you're beating anybody at a place like that, coach is good. That's a real sign. So yeah, we'll see. Big happenings in New England this week. All right, that is our show. We appreciate everyone who continues to listen, subscribe. I met up with a couple guys over the weekend. They said they got a friend to listen. See, double. If everyone gets a friend, you have a friend. If you don't have a friend, we're your friend. But if you have a friend, get them to listen. We double our listenership. Everything's good. Continue to subscribe. We're back Tuesday. We have all of it. And yes, we will get to the phishing scandal. We will get to the phishing scandal. Okay. Don't think we are not. There's too much football today. Another specialty. I got some good stuff for Tuesday.
Oh, man.
Good stuff. We might need to we could almost emergency pod just the nonsense.
Thursday, so. we're going large.
Buckle up. It's going to be a long one on Tuesday. All right. We'll talk to you